can't tell that I got a haircut. You can't tell. Seriously. No, look, I got this one cut, this one cut, this one cut. Well, it's because I just woke up not too long ago. That's why. I can't tame this piece. I don't know. What do you want me to do? Yeah, putting water on it might be a good idea. Hello, everyone. Good morning. Martin Zender coming to you again from my laundry room studio to detail the atrocities that will take place at the end of this age, having to do mainly with money, power, and control, and of course with the Jews obtaining power, money, and control, and the Jews will want to forward their version of the Messiah, and it's going to be a false Messiah. Here's what I have against the whole shebang is that the Jews rejected the original Messiah, their true Messiah, the real Messiah, because he was humble and he was of no reputation and he had no pedigree. Unfortunately, they didn't investigate it because how's this for a pedigree? David? Hello? Yes. So they will accept, however, the false Messiah. And the false Messiah, the man of lawlessness, will seem to be their friend in the first 3.5 years. Then somewhere in the middle, he will receive a death blow, come back to life, and be obsessed by Satan, and then will turn against them. There's a reason he turns against them, is that the nations, the kings, become ticked off, basically, and putting it in Zender terminology. They become ticked off at Babylon and the Jews that run Babylon because they're so wealthy now. They're just so filthy rich that it becomes odious. It becomes odious has become a favorite word of mine over the last couple of weeks. They can't hope to pay them back anymore. They can't help. They can't hope to. So the only way they can get out from under the debt is by destroying Israel. And the kings talk the Antichrist into this. I mean, it says this, one of my favorite verses of my least favorite part of Revelation is verse 17 of chapter 17. God imparts to their hearts to form his opinion and to form one opinion and to give their kingdom to the wild beast until the word of God shall be accomplished. These are the kings of the earth. Let's go back to verse 16 to remind you of this stuff. And the 10 horns which you perceived in the wild beast, these will be hating the prostitute. They will be hating the prostitute. Before, they loved the prostitute. They were cavorting with the prostitute. Oh, yes, they were. But then something changed. Satan got into the mix, turned things around, and they will be making her desolate now and naked. They will be eating her flesh, and they will be burning her up with fire, for God imparts to their hearts to form his opinion. So it is God himself that has a case against the prostitute, the unfaithful of Israel, who are amassing wealth. Because as always, the Israelites think that money is power and stature is power. It's always influenced their decisions, badly influenced their decisions, power and money. And when I say power, I don't necessarily mean political clout. I mean physical stature. I go back to Saul, the original Saul, King Saul. Israel wanted him because he was handsome and he had broad shoulders. He was a tall man. He would have been on the cover of GQ if he were alive today. I don't know. Who's the modern day equivalent of King Saul? I don't know. Because I can never think of any popular figures. I can never think of any movie stars when I need to, because they're becoming so insignificant to me. They're being discarded. The chiefs of this eon are being discarded. So the nations form one opinion, and they give their kingdoms to the wild beast because they figure now that he's so grouchy, having been possessed by Satan, gives him an extra layer of grouch. And as I said, Satan's no longer going to hide. Now he hides behind righteousness. It's not going to be that way anymore. He's going to drop the guise and it's all out attack. The fangs and the claws will be out. Yes, with the press of the world in their power, and this is the way it is today, And it's definitely going to be even more pronounced in the coming few years when these things start to develop. So with the press of the world in their power and the politicians of the world in their pay, that is the politicians of the world all owing them, the Jews, Israelites, sorry, I'll say that sounds better, of the end time will be the king makers and the king breakers of the world. They will make you or break you. Because if money is what made you as a king, then and that money comes from a source, of course, and the source, of course, is Israel, then that same entity that provided you with the money can break you. And so Israel decides at that time who is kings and who is a king and who's not a king. And this goes with the last verse of verse 18. And the woman whom you perceived is the great city which has a kingdom over the kings of the earth. I can't emphasize that enough. Makes and breaks. So now they're trying to choose a man who will be their Messiah. And of course, it's the man of lawlessness. But again, treachery ensues, as it always does. Treachery, treachery, treachery. Turncoats, traitors. The man of lawlessness comes to be a traitor. Oh, you're the greatest. We're going to make you our Messiah. Oh, thank you. That's very nice. And then this is the result of choosing a Messiah based on the soul, not on the spirit. The spirit chooses Jesus Christ, the humble Nazarene, and sees in him the true power, which is not physical. It's not economic. It's all the opposite of these things. You see the opposites being built here. There's no more opposites than the opulence of Babylon and the power that they wield over the earth. Wow, that's real power. Who doesn't want to have that kind of influence? That's the whole lust of politicians today. They want to have influence over other people. Power and money are that influence. Money buys it. Money buys power. Sounds like a big headache to me. Why would you want to do this? But they can't wait to do it. They have to do it. They want to do it. So the nations mortgage their manhood and their future to be subject to Babylon. But they get tired of it. And that's the thing. I'm going to read you a passage from A.E. Knox's book. And this is very illustrative of how it happens, of why the nations form one opinion and why they turn against Israel with the man of lawlessness at their head. First of all, this: it's difficult to feel kindly toward those to whom a nation pays such colossal sums. So the interest rates, you remember in the Old Testament how much God hates usury. Usury was like exorbitant, confiscatory interest rates. It's one thing to charge interest. There's not necessarily anything wrong with lending money and borrowing money. It's the interest rates, the money you pay someone to borrow that money. It's a normal fee. Somebody's doing you a favor. They're giving you money that you don't have. So of course they're going to charge something. But when you have someone in a helpless position and you're holding them down and they're squirming and you take advantage of their weakness by increasing the interest rate, say from 5% to 50%, that's evil, that's wrong. And so you don't feel kindly toward people who are doing that. And the Jews can't, the Israelites, that sounds so bad to say, Jews, they can't leave a good situation alone. So they turn the cranks, turn the screws on people. It's greed. That's what's going to precipitate the end. The greed. And the other nations are going to finally not be able to take it anymore. And it's the man of lawlessness who's going to suggest that. Like there's going to be a day when he says, this interest is getting a little high, isn't it? And then that's going to come to pass. Verse 17, where God causes 10 kings to form one opinion. And the one opinion is going to be, yes, it's getting a little ridiculous. It's getting a little ridiculous. They're really taking advantage of their position. Yes, they're king makers and king breakers. And yes, we have enjoyed a degree of luxury by sidling up to them and schmoozing. But now they're demanding such interest. They're demanding more and more and more and more, and we can't take it anymore. That's the thing. Nock mentions this. The fact that the United States spent billions to help, Germany with reparations, war payments, ill feeling because they owed such huge sums to their ally. Now, isn't this ironic? You have an ally who is lending you money to with the intention of rebuilding your country. But then their ill feelings arise because it's so tricky when you lend someone money. This is my suggestion, is don't lend anyone money. I think my friend Solomon suggests the same thing somewhere. Because it causes problems. It causes problems. You think you're doing someone a favor. I'll lend you money. But then there comes these stipulations, and then you begin to resent. You have ill feelings toward the person lending you money, which you shouldn't really have, but you feel like you owe them. Oh, I owe him. I owe Uncle Ted. He gave me, $5,000 to help me start up my business. Now I owe him, and every time I see him, it's very awkward. And awkwardness turns to hatred, potentially, if Uncle Ted keeps reminding you, if he maybe lords it over you. So certain people, you don't want to borrow money from them because you just know they're going to lord it over you. And then you don't want to be beholden to them in that way, especially if it's a relative. It's very awkward. My suggestion to you is, when it comes to money, this is what I do. When I give money to people, and I do this, I never attach any strings to it. I mean, they can do whatever they want with it, and I don't pay me back. This is especially true with my family. If my sons need money, I'll help them and I'll give them money what I can. And Dad, I'll pay you back. No, I can't say no fast enough. No, you won't pay me back, but it'll make me feel better. Forget it. It's a gift. And if you don't accept this gift, I'll burn the money in front of you. I'll literally take a match and set it on fire. Because that's what it means to me. That's what money means to me. Okay. In the sense that I never want to, I need money to, keep the rent going and everything, but I don't ever want money to become a wedge, to become a lever that someone uses to manipulate me or that I use to manipulate somebody else. But this is the precise situation that's going to happen at the end of this eon with the Israelites, who own basically everything. Ill will. Yeah, ill will on steroids. And when you see what this ill will produce, well, it's going to produce Armageddon. It's going to produce the beginning of the end. And so it is with money. So it is. It all starts well. It seems to start well. Things are going along swimmingly. People are happy. They're flush with cash. And, credit cards. That is it. That's it in a nutshell. Just look at credit cards. If you're in credit card debt, I beg you to get out of credit card debt. I beg you to get out of all debt, but especially credit card debt. Feels so good, doesn't it? When you take that piece of plastic out of your wallet or your purse, and you can instantly buy something. It satisfies the human lust for stuff, for good feeling, a good feeling. To many people, buying things, shopping is a sedative. It's a drug. It just gives you that rush of something is different. I have a new possession that you didn't actually pay for it because you went into debt. And of course, you tell yourself that, well, I'll make sure I pay that bill off by the end of the month so that I'm not socked with what? Incredibly ridiculous interest rates. You're lulled into this thing. You're baited into the debt by interest rates that are attractively low. But then you have to read the fine print, which is like in four-point type and like 10 paragraphs of the stuff. And you find out that, if you don't pay on time, then their interest rate goes from 6% to 16% and then to 26%. And then who knows what? It just compounds. It's ridiculous. Human nature takes over. And of course, the banks know this. The banks make a living off of human nature. Human nature is we want stuff and we want it now. And our eyes are bigger than our budget. And so this is in your own life, if you look at these things, now just take that and apply it on a world scale, on an unimaginable scale, where there's one entity that gives everybody their good feelings about what they have and what they own, and that's the Jews. And then there's that part of human nature with them that wants to get richer. The rich want to get richer. The powerful want to become more powerful. And so that is when there is a tipping point. And the tipping point is we're tired. We have ill feelings toward these people that we owe so much money to. That's the tipping point. That's the opinion that forms that we can't repay these people. So we're going to eliminate them. That's when the tide turns. That's when they come after Israel. That's when they come after them. All the nations gather against Israel in the Valley of Jehoshaphat. Does that have a happy ending? Yes, I suppose it does, down the road. But before we get to that, we have to probe further into the depravity. And this we will do by the will of God tomorrow.